Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Take a trip down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear as PSP rides again. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium with your hosts, Mike Norris, Jerry Oates, and Bobby Simmons.
Good evening, everybody. After a week off, we are back with the September 22nd version of Peach State Pandemonium. This is Michael Norris, and as always, I am joined by the dynamic duo of Bobby Simmons and Jerry Oates. How are you guys doing this evening?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Well, been better. I gotta start us off on a sad note, fellas.
Don't do that.
Especially for me and Jerry. Found out that our friend Mr. Eddie Smith passed away about 3:30 this afternoon.
Don't tell me that, Bobby Simmons.
Yep, he was 84 years old.
Don't tell me that. My God.
Charlie called me just before I called you guys. So don't have any arrangements or anything yet, but what a guy. I told Charlie, we were talking, I told him, I'm not sure how much formal education Eddie Smith had. My guess is he probably didn't go too far in school. But that's the smartest man I ever met in my life.
Don't think he wasn't. You can ask my brother-in-law, Ron Newman, who I think is super intelligent, could build anything, make anything, take blueprints, this and this and this, and he was in awe of Eddie Smith.
I've seen him take a watch apart. I mean, you could tell him what you wanted. He had put a chew of that tobacco in his mouth, and he had spit on the ground 3 or 4 times, and he'd put his hands in his pocket, and he'd think about it, and then he'd say, "Yeah, I can do that." And he would, and he just work it out in his head and do it. Just anything.
Did you know him, Mike?
No. I've heard everybody talk about him over the years, so I feel like I knew him.
Oh, you would have loved him. Everybody loved him, didn't they, Bobby?
Yes, it did. He was, if you had a problem where you had to fight your way out of the ring, or you had a problem with spectators or whatever, he was the first guy there to help you. He was, he had you back no matter what the situation was, and he was a good guy. He was just an all-around good guy. He operated at his own pace and his own speed, but he was quite a fella.
Oh, I hate that, Bobby. Oh, God. Had he been sick long, Bobby?
Yeah, he'd been in a nursing home. They had diagnosed him with Alzheimer's, and he was his health had been declining. And I got a call a couple of days ago, said that they had said he, probably wouldn't be, but, another 24 hours or so. And he made it 2 days, but about 3:30 this afternoon, he went on home. So, he gonna be missed by everybody that knew him. So,
I hate that.
Did he have any family left, Bobby?
Yeah, his wife. He'd been married for quite some time. His wife and I'm sad to say I don't know the daughters' names. He had one or two daughters, so he survived by some family. I'm not sure how many and who all exactly, but yeah, he still had some family left, and his wife had been with him for a lot of years.
Bobby, how long since you had seen him?
Probably 7-8 years.
Really?
Yeah, the first get together we had up here, which was, I don't remember exactly what year we started having our little get togethers up here around Atlanta, but the very first one we had, he came to it, and he never came back to any more because
was it Golden Corral or something?
At the Golden Corral, I didn't Conyers there. Yeah, he came to that one, and then he a friend of mine works for a tobacco company, and before they changed the law, he was able to give out free samples, and I was able to get him cases of chewing tobacco, and I would take it to him. He'd meet me up on the north end of Atlanta, and I'd take them to him. So I would see him periodically then. But it's been 7-8 years, I guess, since I actually saw him.
How did he look? Same?
He looked same. He hadn't changed a bit.
You kidding me?
He had not changed a bit. You know, he was never very big. He just straight up and down.
Straight up
and
down.
He had not changed a bit. Sounded the same. Looked the same.
He's still living in Gainesville?
Still in Gainesville.
Oh, that's sad news, Bobby. I hate to hear that.
I hated to dump that on you, but another one, and Jerry, I don't know if you know this young lady or not, but I know Michael does. Tom Drake's wife, Chris Drake, has slipped into a coma over in Coleman, Mike, and she's not doing real good either. So,
wow.
That's,
I do not know her. No, I don't.
Her, did you ever meet Tom?
You know, Bobby, I hear y'all talking about it. It seems like I have, but I can't say for sure.
He was in the same Olympic class with Danny Hodge and worked all over the Southeast. Then he went into politics. Tom was Speaker of the House in the state of Alabama for a number of years. And him and Chris are both attorneys. And I met them through Cauliflower Alley and the reunion there in Mobile. And me and Chris just hit it off. And I introduced her to my wife. And I told Debbie, I said, if by some stretch of the imagination I ever get in trouble, I said, for any reason, and I have to have an attorney, I said, call this lady. Don't call Tom. Call her. And she told Debbie, she says, honey, if he gets in trouble, you call me. I'll come get him. And when I heard the news she had went into a coma, I called Debbie. I was almost in tears. I said, well, I got to be real careful not to get in trouble. My attorney, I don't think, is going to be able to help me. So, great
well, that's
lady.
That's what I said.
Great lady.
Tom Bob, super people. Just
yes, they are. But anyway, back to what I was talking about before we went on the air. I think everybody else ought to know about this, too.
What are you, Commissioner of Animal Control?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure what his official title is. I think he's in search of wild animals.
Well,
but anyway, there was a story. It's online at the Athens Banner-Herald. It ran in the Athens paper on September the 20th. It was picked up by the news services. Man, our friend Mr. Oates is a big deal here.
Yeah, they made a big deal out of it.
Yes,
they
sir.
Y'all moved to Savannah. Didn't think anybody would remember who I was or am. And I got this job on a fluke, man. I was working out, thank God, for my working out all these years. And I met the police chief. And my wife and I was working out down at Tybee Island, and this guy was in there. I didn't know him from anybody. Big, thick guy. He looked at me. He said, "Man," he said, "you mind me asking you what's your name?" I told him. He said, "I thought that was you." He said, "I know all about you, and I know about you had a gym in Columbus." He said, "I've been to Columbus." Blah blah blah. Anyhow, he's a police chief, and I said,
you thought you were going to jail at that point, didn't you?
Yeah, I said, God, they found out about me over here.
you heard that part. You kind of puckered a little bit, didn't you?
Yeah. Anyhow, I got to talking to him. And, you know, about 3 months later, I just told him, I said, hey, Bob, I said, if you ever get anything for me to do down there, I said, let me know. He said, I'll keep that in mind. So, I thought that was the end of that. And so he called me one day. He said, look, he said, I got the greatest job at Tybee Island. I said, what's that? He said, animal control. I said, what all does that consist of? He said, well, we got these, they call them mules, which is a four-wheeler, but, you know. He said, you ride the beach every day, long as you want, catch people, you know, walking their animals or bringing any kind of pets on the beach, give them tickets. I got van to ride around in. I mean, it's just the greatest thing in the world. You know, everybody waves to you, you know. It's just, I mean, it's wonderful. The main thing is, you know, you're not really hunting animals. You're hunting people breaking the laws with animals, you know.
Yeah.
You know, people walking them. Because Tybee Island's a small place, you know. They don't have any kind of pets at all on the beach. And, you know, and people walking their dogs without, you know, being on a leash, you know, that's a fine, and just stuff like that. It's wonderful.
Getting paid to drive a four wheeler on the beach, man, that's got to be some kind of law against that.
You can't ride a motor vehicle on the beach. You can't, but I can.
I just have one thing to remind you of, Jerry. Jaws.
What's that?
Jaws.
Oh, let me tell you.
Amity Island was a little small community, too, until that shark got there. So you may be finding yourself out on a boat trying to catch a shark.
Well, I tell you what you want. You won't find me in that water. I talk to those guys fishing on the beach, you know. I'll stop and talk to them, and I said, man, you know, this is when I first started doing that. I said, you know, I've been out in that ocean, I don't know how many times through the years down here. And I asked one guy, I said, man, you ever catch any sharks? He said, catch any sharks? He said, last week I caught a six-footer. I said, what are you talking about, man? He said, yeah, I pulled it right up here on the beach. They're not supposed to shark fish, you know, because it's not good for tourism, you know. But you don't know what you're going to catch. They catch six-footers, you know, 200-pound sharks. And I talked to a guy that's in Coast Guard, flies helicopters. He told me, he said, you ever see all the shadows they see when they fly over Tybee? And they don't have any shark bites. I don't understand it. I don't understand it. I do not understand it.
People laugh at me. I love to walk the beach early in the morning, late in, you know, in the evening as the sun's going down. But I will not get in the water, and my wife laughs at me. But I've got a philosophy. If I get in the water, I'm on their terms, and they would get me. They look at me and they think buffet. I mean, I know.
Well, Bobby.
But if they walk up on the beach, I believe I got a good chance to wear them out.
Well, Bobby, this is a old theory about, well, we haven't had a shark bite down here, and nobody knows when. They say you've got just as great a chance of getting struck by lightning as you do getting bit by a shark. But I'm the one.
Oh, yeah.
That's the way I look at it. I'm the one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not getting out there. I'm not getting out. They got stingray down there. B-52s, they should be. I'm telling you, I see them pulling in, man. They got barbs on them. They look like daggers. I'm not getting in there.
Oof.
And they had something this summer called, y'all may have heard of this, I've never heard of it. It's a jellyfish, but it's called something man of war. Portuguese man of war. They would tear these people up. You wouldn't believe. They look like they've been burned with wire, hot wire.
Mm.
Oh, God. They're dangerous because it was so hot. They were coming up. They weren't supposed to come this far up from the south, but the water was so hot. Well, I saw one on the beach. I didn't know what it was. It's the wildest. How'd you know about that, Bobby Summers?
I just heard of them.
Well, they're for real. Let me tell
you. That's just another reason I ain't getting in there.
I'm not either. But no, all kidding aside, I've never been blessed by anything like this in my life. I've been in class.
I was kidding you a little bit here, but I'm telling you, I read the story. It's a great story, man. And
they called me and told me that AP had picked it up, but they did a huge picture with Ted and I in the paper. And
yeah, I got it here on this. It's good.
Oh, you got the picture part.
Yeah, the guy, I'm sad to say I don't even remember his last name. He's a friend of mine. I say he's a friend of mine. He was in, I met him at years ago. He's a big friend of Joe Scarpa's, and he's on my email, and he sent me this. He said, you might enjoy this, and it's actually, it was printed from, like I say, from the Athens Banner-Herald, from their online department, and it gave me the picture of you sitting on the ropes with Ted sitting there, and
got
the whole smear here.
But the police chief told me, I talked to him Monday night, he said that we've had people from all different kind of agencies calling us about that article. I said, well, that's good.
You might get a reality show out of this, Jerry.
Yeah. He told me, he said, the chief said, if you get on the on some one of these talk shows, he said, I want to go with you.
Send me that article, Bobby.
Okay.
Don't mind.
Okay.
But I was honored that they did that, you know, not being from here, but they think it's a big deal, so.
Let's
Sure. Anyhow.
All right, well, we're going to be joined tonight by somebody we have talked about on this show several times, and that is Charlie Fulton. I'm going to get him on the line here in just a minute, but before I do, I've got a couple of birthday wishes to shoot out. One, today is Doug Summer's birthday, and it's also the shining, wonderful Mr. Personality, Ole Anderson's birthday today.
Well, I'll be dog. Happy birthday to both of
you. Yeah.
I thought Ole was older than 69 years old, but I guess he's not. I guess that's about right.
I thought he's a little younger than that.
Well, according to what I've seen, he was born in 42, but if my math is correct, that would make him 69.
Your math is correct, sir. How's Doug?
That I don't know. I have not seen. I would see Doug probably, I would think, in his late 50s, maybe. I'm trying to think when he started, because he came out of Gagne's camp, but I don't know what year. I think the first results I've ever seen of Doug working was in the mid-70s in Texas, I think. Well, he refereed some up for Gagne when he was breaking in, but I think his first full-time...
He's what, 4 years older than you, minimum?
I'm not sure how old Doug is. I met him in the 70s. He came through here in the 70s, too, I think, but I'm not sure when exactly.
He's probably bumping 60.
Anyway, I can remember when I used to think 60 was old.
It's not anymore, sir.
No, it's not. No. We were at work a few years ago, and one of the young ladies that works there, she's my age. She's actually about a year younger than me. And somebody that we knew or something, the conversation got around. The guy was like 60 years old, and he had a heart attack, and he had passed away. And they said, man, that's young. And I started laughing. And they said, are you laughing because he's dead? I said, no, I'm laughing because the way y'all talking. I said, 10 years ago, y'all said, well, the old fart lived to be 60 years old. And now all of a sudden, it's not so old anymore. I'm developing the Charlie Smith philosophy. I want to live to be 120 and get shot by a jealous husband. Or as my wife says, she says, I want to be a burden to somebody.
Well, let me try and get Charlie on the line. Let's hope we'll have better luck with him than we did with Don Fargo a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm still getting over that.
Fargo lives out there in the woods, though, so. Hello, Charlie.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Michael Norris, Jerry Oates, and Bobby Simmons with Peach State Pandemonium. Welcome to the show. How are you this evening?
Very good. Thank you very much. You know, I've been listening to you guys for a little bit. It was great hearing everybody's voice again. I think old Doug Summers is about the same age as me, and that's about 62.
You're not 60. This is Jerry. Charlie, how you doing?
Good. How you been?
I'm doing great. Are you 62, really?
Yes, I am. I turned 62 in March.
Well, I'll be dog. I figured Doug was at least 60.
I'm pretty sure he's my age. You know, I could be wrong, but...
Because I know Ted, my brother, turns 60 in November. And
are
I don't
really?
Believe that. Yeah, I don't believe that. Just you know, it's just... Where did
I
it go?
I was going to say, I remember when I was young in the business, and there'd be guys around here 42 or 43, and I said, when in the Christ are these guys going to retire? You know what I mean? Why don't these guys just leave? Let me have a chance. You know, I never said that, but I used to think that. I used to say,
oh, God. What year did you break in the business, Charlie?
And I'll tell you, I started training in 1967, and I had my first about 20 matches in 1968. I started in Allen Park, Michigan with Louis Klein.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw you had Mickey Doyle on your show a couple months ago.
Right. Right.
And he started up in Klein's gym too, you know, along with Sonny right. King and, you know, got a lot of other guys.
Charlie, was you from Ohio?
Yeah, I'm from Marion, Ohio.
I thought you was from Ohio. Are you still there?
I moved back in, when was it, in 2000 to, I moved back here in 1990, you know, because of my parents. I was living in Brooklyn, New York at the time, you know, and I moved back here in 90, but both of my parents have passed since then, so I'm just used to this. This is a pretty small town, you know, and I couldn't handle the Brooklyn, New York again, or no more of that. Not, you know what I'm saying? All the traffic and all of the rat race.
Well, when did you actually get out of the business?
My last match, I think, was about 19 years ago.
Really?
Yeah, and that was, you know, I left. The last time I worked for Vince in New York was in 85, and then I had some heart problems when I was in 83. You know, and I was still kind of young then, you know, I was like 34. And, but full time, I finally finished. I was off for a while, and then I went back to work. I shouldn't have, but I did. And then full time until about mid 85, and then, you know, part time until like late 91 or something like that, you know. But I had a wrestling school here. I'm sorry.
I said, was there ever a territory you didn't work in? I think I've seen your name pop up in results in just about every major territory through the 70s and early 80s.
Well, there was quite a few I didn't, you know, but as far as like, you know, well, just like you guys, you know, as far as like, you know, Tampa or, you know, Nashville or Atlanta or Charlotte or, you know, any, you know, I was up in Montreal a little bit and you know, through Ontario and, you know, and I started in Detroit. But, you know, I was in a lot of different states, you know, like St. Louis and all this other stuff. But sometimes just in and out, you know. And
I think, Charlie, I think you were in Charlotte when Ted and I were up there together.
Yeah, I was. I'll tell you, I was looking at that because I couldn't. I started to think the only time I was around you guys was in Atlanta, but I think you guys were up there. When were you guys up there, in 78?
Yes.
Yeah, well, 78. That's one, because I was looking at on a Mid-Atlantic website, and, you know, they had like a roster of the guys on there, and I saw you guys on there. I think your brother was there first.
I was in Oregon, and I think you were in Kansas City when we were there.
I only did a few shots in Kansas City. I was never there full time.
Oh, you weren't? But
no,
I know we saw you out there. When were you out there?
It was in the mid-70s when I was
there. We were there in 74 and 75.
Well, maybe it could have been 75.
I know
was in,
you were. You was there
was
when
Nick
we were there.
74. Were you at St. Louis at the Keel or?
Oh yeah, we used to go. Oh yeah, we lived in Kansas City, but we used to go to St. Louis, you know, like every other Friday or.
Right. You know, maybe I saw you there because I come up there a few times, and I did Kansas City TV a couple times and the spot show around up there.
Did you work for Vern?
No, I never did.
I didn't either.
Never did. That was one place, you know, I'd like to went, but I just never. I just kind of. I got where I just didn't want to go anywhere, you know, and I was more like a homestead or whatever.
Well, I don't know how often you listen to this program, but your name comes up many, many, many weeks.
Does it really?
Yes, sir. They can, both of them can attest to that. I mean, you was always a pleasure to be around. I thought you was as good a hand as anybody out there. You know, you was one of those guys that, like Ted and I, never complained, never griped about your money, where you were on the card or nothing.
Yeah.
You know.
I know. I'll tell you, I really, you know, I enjoyed myself and being around in those territories, like with you guys in Charlotte and when we go to Atlanta stuff, you know, you was working with, no matter where you was at on the card, the guy you was working with was one of the best around. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There was so many good workers you know, it was like a pleasure to work with you guys and just be around everybody like that, you know. And, you know, I never took for granted. There was times, you know, I was in Charlotte when it was, well, I went back there for the second time, like in 75, and it was popping. And, you know, I just kind of look around and say, this is where everything's at, and I'm here. You know what I mean? And the same like when I was in New York. Sometimes it'd be like a rat race, you just run around, but when it was selling out every place and everything was going great, I just kind of took a breath and, you know, say, this is the place it was going, you know, and I'm lucky enough to be here, you know.
How long was you up there?
Jiminy. I first went up there in January of 82, and my last match up there was in sometime in the middle of 85.
Really?
You know, for Vince, yeah. But I was out for a while because I had, you know, I was in the hospital for a while up in Connecticut, and I had to take about 6 months off, and I started training again and working real easy. I moved back to Ohio when I did that, so. But, yeah, I was up there. I enjoyed myself, but there was too much baloney going on, and I got involved in, you know, too much crowd, you know, I'm not crowd, and that's like a corny word, but I didn't take care of business enough. You know what I mean? I was running around too much and everything else.
What did you do when you first got out of the business?
When I first left in 85, I still worked spot shop. Well, I had a car detail shop in New Haven, Connecticut. You know, I had a few guys working for me, and I did that for about a year and a half, and I started working part-time when they had, guys that were just running shows around, like up in Connecticut and Massachusetts and whatever, because all the guys that they used were guys that used to be with the WWF, so everybody they had could work. You know, they were pretty good.
Right.
And I worked around like that, and then I worked with Larry Sharp for a little bit down at the, when I was in Brooklyn, New York, at his Monster Factory down there. You know, I trained guys. And then I moved back up here in 90, and I opened up a gym and trained guys and stuff. And then finally in 92, I got a job with the state of Ohio. I was a corrections officer at the Mansfield Correctional Institution in Mansfield, Ohio.
But I heard you were doing that. I don't know who told me that. Are you still doing that?
No, I tell you, I had to retire in 2006. I'm on my second defibrillator now, you know, for my heart. So I worked 1 year over there with this defibrillator, but I started getting such short of breath that, you know, sometimes you got to defend yourself in there. You know, it's not all,
sure.
You know, and you have to be able to do whatever you have to do. And it got kind of bad, and I retired early on disability. I mean, I got my entire pension, my health benefits and everything else, but I just had to retire a little bit early, you know, because the state
right.
Retirement here is at 60 years old anyway, and I was like 57. But so I've been retired since, 2006, yeah. So I just cut the grass now and watch Law and Order on TV and play with my dogs. That's about it.
Well, I'm glad you're doing good, Charlie. I really am. I've just been around you many, many times, and I always respected you and your work, really.
Well, I'll tell you, that's right back at you, you know, because you guys are like top of the line, and, you know, you don't find that everywhere you go, but you guys were just good hard-nosed workers, good clean-cut guys, and you know baloney, you know what I mean?
Well, I appreciate that.
You took care of business, you know, so. No, I always thought highly of you, you know, you and your brother.
Hey,
well,
Charlie,
we appreciate
Bobby
that.
Timmons.
Yeah, Bobby.
How are you, sir?
I'm going to say something. Bobby, I'm not going to hold this against you, but my wife's maiden name is Simmons. I don't know.
I saw
if
that. I told my wife. I said he married well.
did you know my wife's maiden name was Simmons?
I see. We're friends on Facebook, so I see it every once in a while.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah, you're right.
I just want to, two things here. I want to agree. I just want to chime in on what Jerry said. I got to know Charlie from two different aspects. Number one, I refereed for a lot of years, and number two, I worked in the office for Barnett, and I got to see guys in a little different light. I've heard Charlie talk more tonight in the 10, 15 minutes we've been together here than I heard him talk the whole time he was in Georgia. He never said anything. I just wanted to echo what Jerry said. You booked Charlie Fulton somewhere, and you did not worry about him showing up. You didn't have to worry about him showing up looking like a bum, and you didn't have to worry about him being high as a kite or drunk when he got there, and you knew he was going to do whatever you asked him to do.
And you didn't have to worry about what kind of match he was going to have.
Yeah, and you never had to worry about if he was going to have a stinker or not. You always knew it was going to be good. And you know, I've seen it up close being in the ring with him, and I've seen it from watching from a distance. And I just wanted to echo that. There's not a lot of guys – there's a lot of guys in this business that were pretty good at what they did, but not all of them you could trust. And you know, he was. I'm not blowing smoke because you're on the phone. That's just an absolute fact.
I appreciate that, Bobby. One thing, you know, back in those days, I couldn't drink like 7 and 7s, you know, in the dressing room, but I can do that here, sitting here talking on the phone.
I understand.
Okay.
You might remember this. I definitely remember it.
You're
but
not,
I caught a
you're
ride
not
with Charlie
when we
one
went
time.
To Columbus TV, or,
yes, sir.
You're not saying when we went to Columbus TV?
Oh, yes. Charlie had a Trans Am, Jerry. And I caught a ride with him. I was hooking up with John Walker at the Columbus TV, so I caught a ride with Charlie and Les Thornton to go to – they gave me a ride to Columbus TV. And I'm in the back seat of Charlie's Trans Am. Now, you know – it wasn't, you know, Trans Am's wasn't very big, and I was sitting crossways in the seat there, and we had a good ride and nice talk, and they decided to stop at the Dunkin' Donuts right there on Manchester Expressway and get a cup of coffee. So Les is going to bring me a cup of coffee so I don't have to unfold out of the Trans Am. He brought that thing back to me, and I'm not sure if he dropped it or I dropped it, but it fell in my lap. Now, you might not think that a 6'2", 240-pound referee could stand straight up in the back of a Trans Am. I did. It burnt me so bad. I worked on Columbus TV without wearing trunks under my pants, and it's the only time in my life I ever did that, but I was burnt so bad I couldn't stand them rubbing me.
Well, Charlie, if you'd have taken him through a McDonald's, he could have got $3 million for that.
You know, you don't know how many times I thought of that. I remembered that. If I forgot everything else, I remembered that. I remembered that.
Oh, jeez.
Coffee. I know you were seriously hurting.
It burnt the stew out of me. But, yeah, I remember Charlie going, well, you know, Les is a jinx. And I went, no, but I do now.
You've never forgotten that, Charlie, and neither has Bobby.
No.
Oh, goodness.
I remember that forever, yeah.
It's so funny how some things will just stick with you forever, you know.
I know.
And seeing Bobby lit up with a cup of coffee, you'll never forget. Lord.
I tell you, you know, sometimes I look at these, you know, these places where they have results or they have guys what was in what territory, and I look and I'll see I worked against this guy or I was here with that guy, and I don't even remember meeting him.
I'm the same way. Ted and I talk about that sometimes. You just, God,
yeah.
I don't remember that. But some matches you remember just like they were last night, you know.
Yeah, I know. Did
you ever go overseas?
Yeah, I made 3 trips to Japan and 7 to the Middle East.
No kidding.
Yeah, I mean, in between 83 and 85, I made 7 trips to the Middle East. Like 5 of them were for Vince, and 2 of them were for the Samoan.
Well, good for you.
You know, so I made a few bucks and had a good time. And 3 times in, Japan, I went in 73, 76, and 80. So I was in Atlanta in 80, and I went with old Mike Dubois when he was a Russian.
Right.
Alexis Smirnov. And I went with him as his partner. I wore a mask and, like, you know, some mask Russian or something. But yeah, that was a long time ago.
Do you even watch wrestling now?
No. No. What's on TV?
Even. Yeah.
No. It doesn't compare with anything we used to do or anything we were involved with or anything else. Just like everything's like been taken away, you know?
It has, and I don't watch it either. I refuse to watch it.
Yeah, I really don't. I don't. I'll tell you, I'll get on the internet and I'll get on YouTube and stuff, and I'll tell you, this might sound corny, I like to look at old matches from the 50s and 60s. You know, because I believe the way I work and everything else, it would have been better off if I would have been back at that time. You know, but if I'm afraid if I was back in that time, I'd have really got my butt beat every night, you know? I mean, for real. But, you know, I like to watch those old matches. You know, I love that.
Where was your favorite place of all the places you went in the States?
It was between Charlotte, you know, the Charlotte territory and Atlanta. You know, just, you know, I love the towns. Between the weather and everything else. Like Charlotte was the first time I ever went to Charlotte was in 1972. And that was the first place, even though I'd been in the business for a little bit, that was the first place that actually took time to help me learn, you know, when Jim Crockett Sr. was there.
Right.
And I was there for 16 months. I owed that place a lot. You know, there was nothing I wouldn't do for those guys. You know, because they took the time with me. You know, and it wasn't like, eat him up or do this or do that. If he can't do that, let's dump him or no. Come on, we're going to do this. I had a lot of OJT there. I learned a lot there, you know. And then I went with in Tennessee with Frank Morrell, you know, and in 73, and I learned an awful lot there working with him in tag matches. You know, we were the Mighty Yankees back then. And just, you know, working with everybody in tag matches, everything was 2 out of 3 falls, and we'd go 45 minutes a night, you know.
That's the way you learn to do it.
Yeah, the place would get me in shape, and it was like up and down. It wasn't like sit on your butt and we're going to do this and that. It was like, you know, keep up the pace if you want a job. And I'll tell you, I loved working there, you know. It's where, I worked in Detroit. Like I said, that's where I started, you know. And I'd love to work, before I went in the Army. See, when I went in the Army, I got drafted in 1968, the same year I started to work. And so I was gone for 2 years, you know, I was in Vietnam and I came back. Then I went out in 70, the beginning of 71, I went out to Texas. I was in Dallas for a few months, and then I went to Amarillo, and I broke my ankle out there. So I was off for a few more months, and I went to Montreal. I got kind of disgusted, and I quit, and I was off again. So I lost, like, from 68 to 70, you know, I took off, like, another 8 months. I just got a job, and I lost, like, 4 years there that I could have probably worked a lot around, you know, Michigan and Ohio and stuff and really learned, but I never, that was like 4 years lost, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, and I'd have loved to stay in Michigan and work, you know, I worked around here in 75 and, well, instead of after I first started, but in 75 and 76, but, you know, you couldn't make any money up here with the shit, you know?
Yeah.
And I only lived like 100. Well, my parents lived, like, you know, 135 miles from Detroit, you know. And everything was, you know, it was just right. But, you know, when I really, you know, a lot of guys had jobs and stuff, and this is what I did for a living. And I had to, you know, you could make more in working in Charlotte underneath or Atlanta underneath that you could make it working for Detroit. You know, and they were starting to take care of me a little bit, but you still couldn't make any money. But, you know,
well,
I loved it. Huh?
Well, let me ask you this question. We ask everybody that comes on, usually. Yeah. Would you do it over again?
I probably would.
Yeah. That's what everybody says.
In a heartbeat.
I probably would. I couldn't see myself. You know, if I could change stuff, I'd take stuff more seriously. You know, I don't know if you know what I mean, because I didn't take stuff as seriously as I could have. But
I think we would all, if we had the chance, I mean, to go back, I don't mean on today's scale, I mean back in our day, I think we'd all change some things.
Yeah.
You know, I think we'd all definitely make some changes. But it was a life that was, you know, I enjoyed it. I really did.
Charlie, you probably don't remember.
What's that? I was going to say, Charlie, you probably don't remember, but you passed through Mobile in 71, I believe it was. You were only there a couple of weeks.
I would remember. I was in, was that 71 or 72?
It may have been 72, but you were still Gary Martin, or Gary Fulton at that time. That's the name they booked you under.
Yeah, you're right, because I was in Tampa, and they sent me down there for a couple weeks. No, I remember that.
Was you in Florida long?
No, just a couple months. And then later on, you know, through the years, I'll tell you, I went down there, and I wasn't ready to go down there, because everybody was a good worker down there, you know, from top to bottom. I don't know if you know what I mean, you know, and I was...
Oh, I started down there. I know well what you mean.
You know, you got to have your P's and Q's. When I went down there, it was in 72, and Mickey Doyle was down there, you know, and he was doing good. He had a lot of respect from everybody and everything else, you know, and he always was a good worker. But, I was still left from the punching and kicking from the, you know, Detroit and all that kind of stuff. You know, this place wasn't exactly working the holes in the high spot territory, you know. So when I finally left and got out, and I finally learned. But yeah, I remember being down there. Sure.
Jay, tell him who your first opponent was in Tampa.
It wasn't you, was it?
No, I didn't get any big until 79. You guys were a little bit ahead of me. Wasn't your first match with Tia Mooka down there, Jay?
Oh, mine. Yeah. I thought you was talking to Charlie.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I thought you
saw that. He knows exactly what you mean.
I don't think Duke knew what I meant. But Charlie was right,
Jerry,
man. That talent down there was something else, man. I mean,
Where's that?
In Tampa.
Oh, yeah. You know, that was all like a work. You know, like it wasn't a shoot, but it was like a work and work hard and work them holes and do your few little spots. And since I was a puncher or a kicker, that wasn't like a...
But that was a great place to learn because of the talent they had.
Yeah. It was, you know, I'm glad I was able to... You know, go there. But like I said, I'm really glad I was able to go to Charlotte. And that's where, you know, all the guys that, you know, used to work there, you know, Abe Jacobs and, you know, Jerry Briscoe. And when I first went to Charlotte, Jerry Briscoe was the youngest guy there. And then I went there, and then I was the youngest guy there.
But, you know, that talent was from top to bottom also.
Oh, yeah. Those guys could work. You know, anybody was in there, they could work. You know, that's why it was, you know, you could really learn good in there, you know. And like old Art Nielsen, you know, he helped me a lot. He was there. And you know, just all those guys. Les Thatcher, he helped me a whole lot. You know, I worked with him a lot. He taught me a whole lot.
Yeah, Les was, I'm telling you, the guys back then, you know, if they saw a young guy coming along and had some promise. I mean, they would take time with them. I mean, really.
Yeah. There were some good guys, you know. It wasn't, you know, they were ready to help, you know, give you a hand and everything else. That's
did
what
you ever,
cool, you know, that's what's good about it.
Did you ever work Oregon?
No, I never did. Never did.
Yeah, but you said you worked Canada, huh?
Yeah, I worked through Ontario, you know, like for the Bear Man. I worked up in North Bay, and I worked some up in Montreal. I first went up in Montreal. That was in, when was that, in 71. That's when I told you after I broke my ankle, then I went up and I went to Montreal and I went to North Bay, and that's when I just got disgusted and I quit, you know, and came back to Detroit and come back to Ohio, and I got a job as a carpenter. And I worked
but
for about 8
like
months.
It. You didn't like Canada? You didn't like Canada?
No, I thought, well, yeah, I liked it. I thought I got screwed around when I went up there because, you know, I went up there with, was it Louis Klein's daughter? I went up there with two girls, one girl and Louis Klein's daughter, and then I get up there, and I don't know what happened, but it was more like I was their driver and, you know, some kind of flunky, and then they fooled around, they finally booked me, and then they booked me on a few shows, and then, of course, I didn't have a car, and I just, one time they had me take a bus somewhere, and I just got, that's it. I said, I don't know, I just caught an attitude, and I said, that was it.
Who all was up there when you were there?
I'll be honest with you. I know, I think Abdullah was up there. I can't remember. I really can't even remember. You know, but then later on, I went back, well, and, you know, in the 70s for the Sheik, I went up there and worked like in a, with Paul Sauvé, that place, you know, and a couple other spot shows up there. That was in the mid 75, 76. But, you know, I used to work in Ontario a lot because, you know, I don't know if you ever heard of the Bear Man. I can't even think, you know, he's passed away since, but, you know, he had
I've worked for him too.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Well, he had the shows that he promoted, you know, in Ontario and stuff.
Yeah, I went to London, Ontario for him. I'd work Detroit on, you know, Saturday night, and then we'd go up there on Sunday night.
Uh-huh.
He paid good, too.
I was in, you remember Lord, you ever heard of Lord Latham?
Yes.
Lord Latham,
I didn't know him.
Yeah, Lord Ethel Layton. He was, you know, he was like a big-time wrestler and announcer on TV. I worked with him in London, Ontario.
Really?
Yeah, he was, you know, he was like a legend up in there. And I got to, you know, a lot of, you know, like the time in the business, you know, I got to work with Lou Thesz, you know. And, that, you know, to me, that was a pretty big deal.
I worked with him, too. I still remember that, yeah.
I worked with him, I think it was in Huntsville, Alabama. And I got him in the headlock, and he gave me a suplex so quick, I didn't know what happened. you know what I mean?
Oh, I know what you mean.
I mean, I had that headlock, and he had me cooking ribs up in the air. I mean, this happened so fast. It was like boom, boom, and there I was, you know, my feet up in the air, and 1, 2, 3. God, yeah, he was something else. He was like a cat.
Now, as far as your pushes and everything, I guess you worked on top more in Tennessee than you did anywhere else that you worked.
Yeah.
You had good runs there with Morrell as the Yankees, but then you were the Morrell brothers as well, and then you and Bobby Jagger, or Bobby Main, as he was known at the time, had good runs up there. What was it like working for Gulas?
I'll tell you, it was, like I said, you know, everybody knocks him. It was a lot better than working for the Sheik, you know? Okay, we'll put it that way. So, you know, from my experience, everybody knocks Nick Gulas, you know? But I'll tell you, Bobby and I, the first time after, well, I was sitting at home one night, and Frank called me up, and he had a couple drinks, and he said, Charlie, I gave my notice. I'm going back to Tennessee. And I said, well, thanks, partner. So that's how I found out he was leaving. Then they teamed me up with, you know, Bobby and I, and the first match we had wasn't that good, you know. It was like two left feet out there and everything else. But all of a sudden from then on, we got what we could. I thought we were a real good team. If we'd have stuck together, I think everything, because we was working on going to Mobile back then in 74.
Mm-hmm.
And different things happened, and I don't know, it was kind of hard. You know, I was married then and had a young daughter, and, you know, who's 39 now. And, you know, when you have a family, it's hard to make decisions, you know, because you don't want to get yourself caught in a jam. And I think more or less I was the kind of one that, you know, put the brakes on it. And, you know, Clemens, he was our manager. He went his way. And, you know, we all went ours, and I ended up going back up to Detroit.
Well, Clemens, wasn't he in Detroit when he got killed in the car wreck? When he worked in that
Yes, I was, yeah. Yeah, he was with him and Brute, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Brute Bernard, yeah. I went to, because I had known Steve, you know, like I said, Steve was our manager down in Tennessee, and, you know, I knew his wife, and he had two little cute kids, and, you know, I went, the funeral was, they had him in, he was in a funeral home in Toledo. And I went up there and stayed for a while, you know, and talked to his wife and everything. And she was from Mexico. You know, Steve, he used to be a big time. He was a big, his dad was a promoter in England.
Right,
and
right.
He worked a lot in Mexico. His wife was from Mexico, you know. And, but him and I and Bobby, I think we made a pretty good team. I think if I'd had any brains and stuck with him, I think we could have done halfway decent.
Well, speaking of Jaggers, where is he?
I have no idea. I haven't heard from him forever. You know, I really haven't seen anything about him.
The last sighting I had of him was when Ted and I were in Kansas City. I hadn't seen or heard from him since.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah.
I'll tell you, I saw him, the last time I saw him, we worked together as a team at the Keel Auditorium in St. Louis. And we were on the first or second match. He just, you know, he was there, and they just happened to put us together as a team. And I forget who we worked against, but that, I'm trying to think if that was 75 or 76, but that's the last time I saw him.
Well, when you were coming into St. Louis, where were you working?
Just St. Louis, you know, and doing the TV.
Oh, okay.
You know, I already made the trip a few times, you know. So, you know, like I said, you know, I went to Kansas City, and, you know, for a few shots, and that was it. Yeah, it was no big deal. It was just in and out stuff, you know. But,
that was a great wrestling town, wasn't it?
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, it was unbelievable.
That Missouri State Championship, that was big as a... That was next to the NWA.
It sure was.
When you had that, when you was a Missouri State Champion, that meant something.
It sure did.
Never forget
sure
that.
Sure did.
Did you ever have the Missouri title?
You were working with somebody for the title, but I think it was
Murdoch.
Yeah, that's who it was. Well, Charlie, did you grow up a wrestling fan? I mean, is that how you got? Were you interested in the business as a young man?
Yeah, I was. When I was real small, my dad used to, you know, go. There was a big magazine store here in town, and he used to go, and you always used to go and get me magazines. And, you know, like in the early 60s, like, it was big around here because Al Happ Promotions was down on the other side of Columbus. You know, Buddy Rogers was real big around here, and Baron, and Johnny Baron and Magnificent Maurice and, you know, Siki and a lot of guys, you know. And Chris, they used to come here at Marion back in the old days and sell the place out. And, you know, we used to go and, you know, it used to come on every Saturday afternoon, you know. And we used to watch wrestling on TV. And, you know, it was like a big thing. I'll tell you, I either want to do that or I want to be a race car driver.
Huh? So there's something else you and Les Thatcher have in common. He was from Ohio, and he was big into stock car racing and all that stuff as well.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, you know, like sprint cars and midgets and stock cars are big around here. You know, I raced go-karts when I was a kid, and when I turned 54, I went and I started racing go-karts again because I never understood it. They had, like, now they have different kind of weight classes, you know. And, like, I could fit with me in the cart, like, a super heavy, like, 400-pound class, you know. And I got that, and I raced for a while. Then I bought what's called a modified midget. It's a micro midget. If anybody's listening out there knows what that is. It looks like, I don't know if you know what a midget race car or a sprint car is. Was a little bit smaller than a midget, and it had a 600cc Honda motorcycle engine on it. The engine set up front, it was offset to the left. And I mean, you know, it looked just like you guys know what sprint cars are?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, it looked exactly like that, but it's a micro. And my big old butt could fit right down in that thing. And I got it, and by the time I tried to race it, I was about, 55, I think. And, you know, I bought the thing and everything else, and I went, and, you know, I never practiced with it or nothing else. I got out on the track, and I was getting ready to race, and I found out I didn't have what it takes. I didn't have enough cojones to run that thing, because they're small, but it runs just like a sprint car. You know what I'm saying? Those guys are broadsliding through the turns and side by side and everything else. So I just ran it around a little bit, and I finally got rid of it. But, yeah, I always wanted to race.
Well, given your choice of the two, getting in the wrestling business, you got to do both.
Yeah.
You could wrestle, and then we jumped in the car and raced to wherever we had to be in 2 hours.
I know.
And serve up hot coffee.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we all got to do that a lot, didn't we? Get to race to that next town.
Oh.
Well, I've got a caller on the line. Let me get them on with us. Caller from Mobile, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello.
Joe Turner.
It's Joe Turner.
How are you doing?
I just wanted to call and speak to Fulton. I hadn't heard from him in so many years.
What? Hey, Joe, how you doing?
All right. I think last time I talked to you was in North Carolina, wasn't it?
Yeah. When I was saying who helped me out, I left you guys out because you and your partner, you guys helped me out when I was in Charlotte. You guys really helped me out a lot, you know?
Well, we always like to.
You know, I know you guys went around to every place and worked forever. Yeah, I know it's been, when was the last time, when was the last time you guys were there in 73?
It's in the early 70s.
Yeah. Like I said, I first went there in 72, and I think you guys were there then. And I know you guys helped me out a lot, you know.
Can I tell a story about me and you?
Yeah, go ahead. Did I do something real stupid?
No, Bobby Sim was talking about this is the most he ever heard you talk.
Oh, yeah.
And one night in Virginia, we was at a motel. And you may remember this, but some girls come by. And they come
Wait a minute. Wrestlers at a motel and girls came by?
Well, listen,
I can't believe Joe Turner's going to tell a story about a motel in
Charlotte. I'm losing all my confidence in it. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Anyway, there's this one girl like Fulton, pretty good, that she kept trying to talk to him, and he wouldn't talk. You remember that, Fulton?
No, I sure don't.
Anyway, when they walked out the room, they decided to leave, and they walked out the room, and she turned and looked at you and said, it sure was nice talking to you. But you wouldn't say nothing to her.
That sounds about like me, yeah.
Yeah.
But I changed as I got older.
Did you?
Yeah, I really did.
Well, I didn't. I stayed. I got worse and worse as I got older.
I'm sorry, Joe. I messed things up.
Yeah. That's all right. I thought it was funny myself.
Yeah, I did too. I'm sitting here blushing and sweating and everything else.
But I really enjoyed being with you up there in the Carolinas, Golden. And I know Bill's listening. He's on
is he really?
Somewhere. Well, he told me he was. I guess he is.
Yeah, he is. He's on. In fact, I'm sitting here. I think I'm going to put him on the air. I'm going to put him on the spot. Hold on just a second.
All right.
Mr. Bowman, you with us?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Oh, good.
Hey,
good.
Hey, Charlie, good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you, you know. You know, like I was telling your partner, you know, you guys really helped me out back there in those days because I didn't, you know, I didn't know my right from my left or anything else, and I know that.
We thought you'd done pretty good.
Huh?
We thought you'd done pretty good.
So we always thought you were a good hand.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, I just, you know, I learned from guys like you, because you guys, I don't know, it just, like I said, everybody was down there in the Carolinas, and, you know, everybody was a good worker, anybody you worked with, usually everybody would give you a hand, you know, and help you out somewhat, and I really enjoyed being there.
Yeah, that's kind of one of my favorite territories, too, Fulton.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
I think I spent about 6 years there altogether, you know, in and out and everything.
Was you there when Luther Lynch died?
No, I wasn't, no.
You wasn't?
No, that was before I was ever went there, I think.
Oh, was? He didn't know him?
Yeah. No, I never met him.
Oh, Luther, he had a chop that you didn't talk for 2 days after he chopped you in the throat. And we never, Bill and I never pinned him, not one call the whole time we was around him.
Really?
And so when Luther died, he died in the ring in Charlotte. And he just won the match, and they kicked him off. He was dead. But anyway, they told us not to go to the wake, you know, the heels and baby faces. But Bill and I went anyhow, and because I was good friends with him. But we were standing out front talking, and Bill said, well, I'm going to go in and view the body. So I went in there, and I waited outside a minute, and I said, well, I'm going in, too. So I walked in, and both of us come out. And the guy said, well, how'd he look? Bill said, he looked pretty good. I said, guys, I got to tell y'all. I said, when I got in there, Bill was laying across that casket. And I said, what in the hell are you doing, Bill? He says, I always wanted to cover that man one time.
That's a true story, too.
No, I believe you would do that. I can believe that.
Yeah. Fulton, do you ever travel, get around anywhere?
Yeah, a few places, you know. You know, to Japan and the Middle East and stuff. And, you know, just regular Atlanta and up in New York and, you know, around Canada a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And,
You do much traveling now? I mean, like just going vacation or anything?
No, I'll tell you, I'll tell you, last year was really the first vacation I took. We went down to Florida, down to Cocoa Beach. We had friends down there, and then we went to the Daytona last summer, you know, and during July, went to Daytona 400. That was the first NASCAR race I ever went to. But I'm going to tell you, I really, my daughter, she lives in Wyandotte, Michigan. It's only like 125 miles from here. And it's just hard for me to travel and stuff, you know. I'm going to be going down to Tennessee at the end of the month.
That's what I heard, the reunion.
Yeah, that reunion thing. That's the first, this will be like the first trip I made in years and years, you know.
Well, you'll enjoy that one. You'll enjoy that. That's real good.
You know, that's the first time I've ever was ever invited any place, so I'm going to make sure I get there.
Well, you automatically invited to anything we have going on. The one of them have Mobile and any of them. You're invited to go to
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, Fulton, I'm going to get off the phone, and I just want to call and speak to you, buddy, because I haven't seen you or talked to you so many years.
You know, I appreciate it, Joe. It's good to hear from you. I know it's been so many years, you know, a long time, but...
Yeah.
No,
well, if you ever come down to our Mobile thing, you can touch them guys there, and they give you my phone number.
All righty.
And do that. All right, buddy?
All right, Joe. I appreciate it. It's good talking to
all
you.
All right. Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Charlie?
Yeah.
Bill Bowman, I'm going to get off the phone, too, but listening to you brought back a lot of good memories, and made me think a lot about the business, and that's what it's all about. Hey, and I appreciate being with you through the years. I'm going to sign off now, and thank you very much, pal.
Okay, bye. You just take care of yourself, Bill, all right?
Yes, sir. Bye.
Thanks, bye-bye. Bill. That's, if you ever get, we've had them on the show a couple times, Charlie. Well, probably three or four times, and they get rolling for it, I tell you. They start telling stories about when they were managed by Dr. Jerry Graham. Curl your hair.
Yeah, you know, I didn't even think about it. They helped me a lot when I first went down there, you know, because they were, you know, they were the tag team down there, and God, it was just, you know. You know, it was really nice hearing from
him. Very, very glad we were able to put you in touch with him. And you kind of saw the change, how the business changed, because you were right there working for McMahon when the whole Hogan era started, when Junior took over and, you know, started buying up the territories. How did you feel about that, or did you even have any feelings about how the business was changing in those days?
I'll tell you, the rumors were going around out there, you know, that what was going to happen, you know, that he was going to, you know how rumors start, but these guys are going to shut down and he's going to do this and this and this. And we used to get together, some of us, and say, nah, there's no way that's going to happen. These other people have been in business for all these years, and all of a sudden, you know, they're going to be gone, and there's only going to be one, you know, one thing going on. And, you know, that was like, I guess that was when it was really starting, and, you know, we didn't figure that out, but, you know, it just ruined everything for everybody.
It did.
You know,
it ruined it for everybody.
There were so many good workers that they used up, and so many good workers that they didn't use, and, you know, it cost a lot of people, you know, of course he made a fortune, but it cost a lot of people a lot of money, a lot of good workers. You know, that could have made a living. You know, that could have gone to Charlotte and make a living, or go to Atlanta and make a living, or you know, or like you say, Kansas City or any place else. Christ, the places don't, you know, they quit existing. And, you know, it just, I think it ruined, you know, just for the business. As far as that, now this is just me. It's just like, it ruined a lot of things for a lot of guys. Like I said, it made them a lot of money, you know.
I agree with you. Everybody folded up their tent and went home.
Yeah, they sure did. Sure did.
Well, who was your favorite person to work with? And don't say Jerry Oates, because everybody seems like they would feel obligated to say Jerry Oates when I ask them that question. I think he finds out who I'm going to ask on the show and mail them money.
Nobody else. Jimmy, there was just a lot of guys that were, you know, I got to work a lot with Randy Savage, you know, Randy Poffo, when we lived together in Atlanta in 77. But I worked with him around here in Michigan, you know, in Ohio, at some of these shows, and, you know, he was a smaller guy then. Well, he never was real big, but God, he could work, you know, and it was like the worst match we ever had was a good match, you know. And, you know, I've worked with Steamboat when he was first starting, and he was, You know, so I tell you, there were so many guys, you know, so many guys that were good and smooth. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's really hard to pick them out.
Well, I'm going to ask you, did you ever work with Moose Cholok?
No, I didn't.
I did. and I lived to tell about it. Most dangerous man I've ever been on.
I heard
the worst Ox Baker.
Ox Baker was Dory Funk Jr. compared to Moose Cholok. That's a fact.
How about the McGuire twins, Charlie? Those are personal favorites of Jerry's. Did you ever work with them?
Yes, I sure did. I forget if it was Frank and I or Bobby and I, but yeah, we worked against them. At least none of us ever got hurt. That was the main thing.
Hey, Charlie, we're really telling on ourselves tonight, but
yeah.
If you work with Fez, did you suffer the double wrist lock? Or did he give you time after dropping you on your head?
Yeah, well, when he dropped me on my head, that's when it went into three.
Jerry had the pleasure of wrestling him.
Huh?
I said Jerry had the pleasure of wrestling Lou Fez.
Oh, did you?
Yes, I did, on Atlanta TV.
How was that?
About like yours.
You know, he didn't hurt me or nothing. And, you know, I did a few things, but God, he was so fast on that thing.
Oh, I know. No, he didn't hurt me, but those guys told me when he goes for that double wrist lock, be ready. Well, I knew it was coming, still wasn't ready.
Yeah, sure, you actually have two wrists on that side then, huh?
Charlie, you mentioned handsome Johnny Barron, and I failed to mention at the top of the show, we lost him this week. He passed away a couple of days ago.
I did. I saw that on Facebook. He was 82 years old.
Yeah. But I've only seen him. I never saw him live or anything. I've only seen video of him. But he and Magnificent Maurice and in those days, the guy who became Abdullah Farouk and the Grand Wizard, Ernie Roth, who was the manager of Mr. Brown, they were tremendous together.
Yeah. You know, Ernie Roth, he used to run my hometown here in Marion.
Really?
You know, he worked
for Ringer, commentator, wasn't he? Television commentator at one point?
Ernie?
Yeah.
I don't think he was. I don't remember that. Maybe he could have been. But I know he used to come here and they used to run Marion, you know. That was back when I first started. It used to be a pretty regular town. And I used to come up here and see him. That was when I worked at like a little program here, you know.
Right.
And that was in 68 when I first started. And he used to come up. So I knew him when I went to New York. He was up there. He was in kind of bad shape. But I had known him for quite a few years.
Now, I know you worked for the Sheik, but did you ever work with him in the ring?
I think so, yeah. You know, on TV, a long, long time. I can't remember what happened, but I'm pretty sure I did.
Bobby had the pleasure of being burned by him on Atlanta TV. Wasn't Atlanta TV you were burned by him, Bobby?
No, we did that in the Omni.
Okay.
Only time I ever got a week off with pay, so I remember it well.
Did you really?
Yeah, we did a deal where he threw it at Abdullah, and Abdullah ducked, and he hit me. I was refereeing, and they towed me out, and I was told to disappear for a week, and they handed me some money and said, stay out of sight, and I said, see y'all. So... You know, it says a lot for Charlie's character. Jerry, you never worked for the Sheik, did you?
Yes, I did.
Did you work for him? It says a lot for anybody's character that went up there and worked and stayed in the business.
Well, I worked. I used to fly up there. I was back in Columbus and had my gym going, and Murdoch asked, called me and said, you want to work for the Sheik on Saturday? I said, yeah. So I was going every Saturday up there. And we was at Cobo one night, and he'd come in. I saw everybody running around. He said, we got some bad news. He said, Joyce said somebody just robbed the box office.
Jeez.
That's the tape. It was the Sheik's wife, right?
Yeah, that was her name, wasn't it, Joyce?
Yes, yes.
Joyce, yeah.
When he died and all these people were on the internet talking about what a great guy he was and how he did this and he did it, you know, I sure am glad I had a fine Southern upbringing when my mama told me if you couldn't say something nice, don't say nothing at all.
Yeah.
I just thought these people ain't talking about the same guy I knew. We were doing a combo or a combination promotion with him where we sent some guys from Georgia up there, and we would work Parkersburg, West Virginia, and then we'd go work Huntington, and we'd split the houses. And the first night we were in Parkersburg, it was me and Ole and Kevin Sullivan. And Kevin told me, I had a room with two double beds, and I told him, I said, you can come over and stay with me tonight. And he goes, well, I'm going to stay with the Sheets guys. He said they're traveling together, and said I'm going to try to help them out some. And we left the matches that night, and we stopped and got a pizza and took it back to the room. And I remember I was sitting up in the middle of the bed eating a pizza watching Johnny Carson, and about, it was probably 12:30, quarter to one, somebody knocked on the door and opened the door. And when I opened the door, Kevin Sullivan kissed me right in the mouth. And he said, I ain't ever been so happy to see nobody in my life. And I said, what's going on? And he said, at the hotel up the street, he said, the Sheets guys, he said, there were nine of them in one room. And he said they had the mattresses on the floor and the box springs on the floor, and they were all just finding a spot where they could sleep. They were 450 miles from Detroit, and they had to do that in order to just to be able to survive.
Jesus Christ.
And, I mean, I just, you know, I mean, that's...
Yeah, you know, I kind of, you know, I mean, I like the Sheik and stuff. You know what? I don't know. But you know what I'm saying? As far as the money, this is a business. And, you know, everybody's, you know, and I saw some of that same stuff.
Yeah.
And guys would put in stuff, the Sheik this and the Sheik that. And, like, you know, they were like, a lot of these guys, you know, are marks that are talking, and they have no idea what it's really like.
Yeah.
What really happened and stuff. Good God.
Whew.
Sheik had everything because nobody else had it. You know, everybody else had nothing.
We got one more call.
He had to have taken care of Bobo.
Yeah. Yeah, for Bobo to stay around all that time.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I just wonder, you know, Tim Brooks was there for a long time. You remember that?
Yes.
He was there for quite a while, and I always, you know, he was there for a few years. You know, I'm not saying he started up there, but when he first went up, you know, he had started there, and then they gave him the gimmick, and he was doing this and doing that. And then all of a sudden, you know, I just wonder how he ever got to, you know, what happened, you know, for that, you know.
Hmm.
Not that he didn't do his job, I'm not saying that, but I just wonder, he stayed around there for a long time.
Sure did.
Well, guys, I got Scott Peel calling in. I'm going to get Scott on the line with us. Hang on just a second. Scott, you with us?
I'm here. You hear me?
All right. Oh, yeah. We need
hey, everybody.
Hey.
How's everybody doing?
We're doing wonderful.
Well, tell me everything Charlie said so I know what to ask.
I was doing pretty good until I found out I might be related to Bobby Simmons.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my word. Oh, man. Yeah, I just called in. I sort of forgot to sit down and watch some TV with my wife. We just finished up doing some stuff outside, and I sat down, and all of a sudden I thought, oh, man, I was supposed to call in that show tonight. So I got online, and all of a sudden I hear y'all talking, and I heard Charlie talking about Mark, so I thought maybe y'all were talking about me not showing up or something. Hey, one thing I'd like Charlie to tell me is, how did you change your name from Gary to Charles, or Charlie?
Oh,
you
okay.
Went for Charles for a while, didn't you?
Yes, why I changed it. When I first, when, yeah, my name is Gary, and I was working as Gary Fulton, you know, Gary. And I went to Charlotte, and Jim Crockett Sr., when I first went there, that's when Gary Hart was there. And I went there, and he said, there's only enough room in this territory for one Gary. And he said, from now on, you're going to be called Charlie.
Hmm.
So that's how I got the name. Jim Crockett Sr. gave it to me.
Cool.
So, yeah, that's how I got it. That's the way it was.
Were you real apprehensive about changing it at first, or did it bother you?
No, I didn't. Excuse me, I didn't care. I could have cared less.
Yeah.
You know? I just wanted to be in a business and work.
Yeah. Did you talk about how you got started in the business or where you got started already?
Okay. No, I got started. Well, I got started at Louis Klein's gym in Allen Park, Michigan. I graduated from high school in '67, you know, in like May, and in November I moved up to Louis' gym in Allen Park, Michigan. And I trained there for a couple, you know, for a few months, and then the first match I ever had was with Louis Klein, and it was with Jackson, Michigan. And that was the best match I had for a long time to come, because you know Louis was, you know, we learned the holes and switched da da da, and I really looked good, you know,
and
I'm trying to, I can't think of the name of the promoter. He's an old timer. He's passed away since. In Jackson, he used to work, but then my next match was with remember Ivan Kamikov?
Yeah.
He used to be with Igor. He used to have another guy work with him, his brothers, you know. And I worked with him, and that was so-so. And then I had a few matches, and then they worked a little program with me and the Hells Angels in Marion here. You know, they gave me like four or five matches before, you know, guys, I was going over, and then I come in and did a save when the Oklahoma kid was, I don't know if you guys remember him or not. I think he passed away back in 68, too, or 69. But he was over pretty good around here, and then I was his partner for a match we had with the, you know, with the Duprees, and then...
yeah, that was Chris
then Holt. With Chris and Ronnie, you know?
Yeah.
And I had a few more matches, and in August of 68, I got my notice, and I was drafted. You know, went in the Army, you know, went to Vietnam, came home, and I got out in 70, and then worked a little bit, and then got a job, you know, did other things, and I finally started working full-time in 72.
Now, you worked one time in 71 in St. Louis against Louis Martinez. Was that you? Yeah, I don't
think I did. Oh, me?
Yeah, I didn't know if that was you or not. I have a Gary Fulton wrestling Louis Martinez in St. Louis in September 71. I didn't know if that's you or not.
Well, I'll be honest with you. It could be. I can't remember.
Yeah.
I mean, I was 71. Yeah, I was still working then, but I can't remember whether.
Yeah.
You know, I forgot so much stuff. I forgot guys I worked with. I forgot I was with the Coates brothers in North Carolina until I looked it up on a, you know, on a Mid-Atlantic website. So.
Yeah. How did you get booked into Florida in 72?
The Sheik.
Uh-huh.
The Sheik got me down there. Like I said, I wasn't ready for that place. You know, that was, everybody was a good worker, and that's a place where you got to know what you're doing when you get there. That's not like a, let me hold your hand. You know, not unless you're somebody special, and I was nobody special.
Yeah, I know you wrestled Bob Roop and Tim Woods down there, and that, you know, it's pretty. I think that's going to school with them.
Yeah, you're not kidding.
Well, The other thing, have y'all talked about the Yankees yet?
We touched on it briefly.
You did? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear.
Yeah, so we touched on it briefly. We didn't really go into any depth with it as far as, you know, working with George Harris and all that. So you were related. Well, Harris was in the Carolinas the same time you were there as well, wasn't he, Charlie?
Yeah, he was. You know, he spent a lot of time there, I knew George for a long time.
How did you meet Frank Morrell and end up going to Tennessee as the Yankee, mighty Yankee?
I met him. He was in Charlotte when I first went to Charlotte in 72. He was there, and I got an apartment, and I lived right beside him, and we lived beside each other, and then all of a sudden I was in Charlotte about 16 months, and then he got a, you know. He talked to me and said, "Listen, I got a chance. I'm going to Tennessee, and I need a partner. I'm going there as the Mighty Yankees." And he asked me if I wanted to go, and I said, "Sure." You know, heck yeah. Because he had been down there before as the Mighty Yankee. You know, I think with Eddie Sullivan.
Yes.
And that's how I ended up with Frank. You know, he asked me to go, so you know, I didn't pass that up. It was like I was gone.
You had a good almost year and a half run there in Tennessee.
Yeah, 16 months. You know, Frank and I, we did pretty decent stuff. You know, nothing like fantastic, but respectable. And then so did Bobby Jaggers and I, you know. Or Bobby Maine, you know, he's Bobby Maine.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had, you know, George Harris, Frank and I, and then, you know, Steve Clemens.
Uh-huh.
But, I'll tell you, I enjoyed myself, and I learned a lot there. I learned a lot there working in the tag matches, putting in a lot of time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I never regret going there. Like I said, I hear a lot of people knock Nick Gulas in the payoffs and stuff, but...
preaching of the choir.
They should have come up the other end up here, you know. They should have checked out Detroit.
When they've been on with us, they told us what the trips were like in Tennessee and how many towns Nick was running and what was it, four or five states, Scott?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yep. Four or five towns a night.
Yeah.
Yeah. You did a lot of traveling. Yeah, there's a whole lot of traveling.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, there was a lot of traveling in Charlotte. You could travel 3,000 miles a week in Charlotte, you know. 2,500
yeah,
anyway, but you know, I had some 3,000 mile weeks in Charlotte.
Shoo-wee.
You know, when you were on McGurk, Charlie?
Yeah.
Would you have worked for Leroy McGurk, Oklahoma, Louisiana territory?
No, I never did. I
think, I've heard that was the worst territory as far as trips and everything. And Jerry can attest to that because he made most of them.
3,000 miles a week.
Really?
We will call Watts' Night Riders.
You know, that's one thing I think about all those miles. I could never do that again. You know, maybe I could. If I was back young again and gung-ho, God, I think about it now and it scares me.
But you know, I didn't coming think down anything about it.
Huh?
I didn't think anything about it.
Back then, no, I didn't either. It was just like, well, hey, that's the way the business is. Either do it or, you know, get out. But, you know, like I said, my biggest trip's going up to Michigan to see my daughter. So, you know, as far as driveways, so when I coming down to Tennessee, that's going to be the biggest drive I've done in years.
When you were unmasked as the Mighty Yankees, when you were unmasked, did they reveal you as Charles Morrell or Charlie Fulton?
Charlie Morrell.
Okay. Then it wasn't long after that you were wrestling with Bobby May or Bobby Jaggers as Charlie Fulton. How did they handle the name change?
Well, Man, I'll be honest with you. I don't even know. I don't know how they. I don't know what they
one
did to that. They did anything.
Bleached your hair and shaved your mustache off for one thing.
Yeah.
Because the pictures
I've
seen, you bleached your hair.
Yeah, I bleached my hair. Yeah. And yeah, I think that was about it. I was going to say something. I had something smart to say, but I forgot it. God damn, my mind's going.
You have any good Bobby Jagger stories?
Nah. No, I really don't.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Huh.
I do, but that's for another show.
Okay.
Believe me.
Come on now, we've had both Fargos on here, so I mean, it's not like we're going to hear something we haven't heard.
No, just his exaggerations. You know, he told us he bought a big ranch out in Kansas, and I mean, it was something every night. You know, and where's your ranch? Well, we'll go by when we go to such and such town, but we never went to that town, and all that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, it was every night. Well, Bobby, when are you going to have us over? Well, we're going to have a big cookout. Well, we hadn't eaten there yet. And all that. I mean, just every night, you know. He had all these steer and cattle and, you know. It was entertainment, brother, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I'm sure that wasn't the first time he'd been worked by one of the boys.
No. And the sad part about it, I hope he don't think he was working me.
Now, you guys know you're talking about my ex-partner. Good God. See, it's a good thing I'm getting this old because my memory's so bad I can't remember anything. So I can't confirm or deny any of that.
Now, you wrestled as Pretty Boy Fulton for a while in Ohio, didn't you?
Yeah, they started calling me that in the 70s. I used to look halfway decent back then.
Yeah.
In the early days, they used to call me Canvasback Fulton. That was a joke, guys.
How was it when you went back to Florida in, I guess it was 79, how did you get back in there, and did you feel a whole lot more comfortable working for Eddie Graham?
I'll tell you, back then, I think it's when they went with Charlotte, Atlanta, and Tampa. They did like a two-week rotation. Like Tampa sent somebody to Charlotte sent somebody to Atlanta, and then, you know, everybody just like rotated, you know what I mean? And, you know, well, yeah, that was altogether different. I could work then, you know, and I could do whatever had to be done. You know, that was no problem, but it was just, they were like, when I went there in 72, it was like top of the line guys. It was no glory, you know, it wasn't no punch kick stuff. Or you had to be able to work. You had to be able to work. You had to be able to sell. You had to be able. You had to be believable.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it was just when I went there. You know, I guess I should have spent more time around Detroit or something. You know what I mean? I mean, it was nobody's fault but my own. But the second time it made twice like a rookie. I could do anything anybody wanted or do whatever, you know. So.
Now, did you finish up here? Go ahead, Mike.
I said Mickey Dole said the same thing because evidently he came, you know, he had a handful of matches coming out of Klein's gym, and then his first full-time territory was Florida as well, and he said the same thing. He got down there and, you know, he was used to punching and kicking and all that, and the guys actually worked holds and stuff like that, but he learned a lot doing that. Of course, he was in Florida several months before
they sent him to Mobile, and that's when he teamed with Boy Ed as the hippie. Mickey was a great worker. I mean, he could work any style, work with anybody.
He was a good, you know, Mickey's a good friend. I talked to him a couple months ago, you know, and I found him on Facebook, and I hadn't talked to him for a while, and we had a long conversation. But yet, Mike, he could have worked, you know, well, he worked a lot of places. He was out in California, and he was here, and he was there, you know, he was down in, you know, in Mobile and all that stuff. But he could have worked, you know, he never went to Charlotte. Christ, he would have been good in Charlotte, you know.
Yeah.
He would have been a fit. He'd have been a fit in anywhere, you know, where it was a good, you know, holes in high spot territory. But Mike could do anything. One of my last matches I ever had, I think it was sometime in early 92, or it could have been in 91, but Mike and I, we got to work together again in some spot show up in Michigan, you know. Well, a spot show. We were working independent stuff, you know, because Mike still works for the post office. You know, I think he's getting ready to retire. But, yeah, Christ, Mike could work. Mike could do anything. Yeah.
There's somebody else we've had on the show several weeks back that you're probably familiar with is Jim Lancaster.
Oh, yes.
Another one that worked around there in Michigan. Greg Lake is another one. Greg called in the night we had Jim on, and Greg was one of those that like you, he bounced around for a lot of territories, but he, I guess, homesteaded more up there with Bruiser and Sheik than anywhere else.
Well, both of those guys, awesome. they started at the same gym I did. You know, Jim and Greg. I met Greg last November at a small independent show over here in Ohio. And I had never met him before, but I always heard of him and everything else because he was from the gym, Compliance Gym, you know.
Right.
But, you know, and like I said, Jim, oh, Christ, Jim was great. He was in Tennessee when I was there. He worked in, I think, Charlotte. He's been all over. He's worked a lot of places and promoted shows and everything else, you know. It's been quite a while since I've seen him. You know, I talked to him on one of the blogs or something, you know, the other day, you know.
Right.
But, yeah, Jim's a good guy, yeah.
Now, who else, I know, besides Linda Klein, who else, the female, came out of Klein's gym? Did Heather Feather go through there and Kay Casey?
Yeah, do you know Heather Feather?
Okay. Right.
Yeah. And you know Sonny King, you heard of Sonny King, right?
Right, right.
He started up there. I'm trying to think. There's a lot of guys that were started through there that were pretty good, but they just never, they always stuck close to home and had a job or something. They worked around Michigan or maybe hit some shots in Ohio, you know. But, I mean, they could work. I'm probably forgetting different names, you know, but, you know, Sonny King, I know he really did good for himself, you know, so did Jerry and Mike, and like you say, I forgot, Greg Lake, he traveled, go ahead.
I think he started the Bounty Hunters too, didn't he?
Yeah.
David and Jerry Novak.
Yeah, see, I forgot about them, Jerry and David Novak. They worked on top in Tennessee for a long time.
Yeah.
They started at Louis Gym. Yeah, I'll tell you, a lot of people went through there, you know. I'll tell you, we just had a little, the ring we trained on in there was just a little of like 2x4 frame made up with plywood on top of that, padding on top of that, and a canvas over top of that, and one end had, he put like posts, cut a hole in the floor, in the cement floor, and put a post up, you know, a post on each side, just where there was ropes on one side, and, you know, just had a steel cord and a, you know, it was like a steel cord and a hose over it. It was like, you know, you take a bump on that stuff, you could take a bump on anything. You know what I mean? It was kind of, it was, it was kind of primitive, you know. Very, you know, guys are seeing now that looking at you and saying, "Are you kidding me?" But yeah, that's what we trained on up there in the gym, you know. And we had some weights. And it was more like an old time hell sky, you know. But, guys would come in there and train with their butts up on that stuff. You know?
Did you wind up your career in my record show, the last I really have a lot on you, is 1980 in Georgia. Is that where you wound up your full-time career?
1985.
Okay.
That was in New York. See, from Georgia, I went back to Charlotte. And then from Charlotte, I went to New York. And... like 85 in New York is when I finally quit working full time.
Mm-hmm. What did you do then?
Then I'll tell you, I opened up a detail shop. I got hooked up with a guy that had a place in New Haven. And I had a detail shop. I had a few guys working with me. I had a few different clients from... you know, use car lots and from a car sales place and get the cars and clean them up and stuff, you know. Then, you know, made some money doing that, and then all of a sudden I started looking back on some of the shows up in, you know, like people are running independent shows, like I said, you know, Connecticut, Massachusetts, all up through New England and Pennsylvania because, you know, there was a lot of guys still living up there that, you know, like the Samoans and Rocky Johnson and, they'd bring Tanaka in and different guys that used to work for Vince, and that's what kind of people they had on those shows. You know, everybody was like, everybody knew who everybody was. And that's when I started working again. And I worked with Larry Sharp a little bit. And when I moved to New York, you know, in New Jersey at his school, and came back here and, you know, worked for a little while, you know, like on all the independents and, you know, trained some guys, and then I got a real job in the state.
Oh, good decision.
Huh?
I said that was a good decision, I'm sure.
I know. Yeah, just think about it. I used to be a man with a gun. How dangerous do you think that is, guys? No. I shouldn't even make jokes like that. But no, yeah. But that was, you know, I got a job for the state of Ohio as a corrections officer, you know, and I worked on death row for about 5 years when I moved it down to Mansfield, and that was a good job, and sometimes, you know, working on the yard and stuff, that was like a net house, and you get around guys, you'd think they'd have been great in the business because they could sit there and try to flim-flam you and everything else, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, the only thing they didn't have was a pair of boots and tights. So, but yeah, that was, you know. But I, you know, for a long time I missed the business. It was hard and it bothered me. You know, I didn't want to. Like I say, I think about, I watch a lot of stuff on YouTube and stuff. I watch old matches. But as far as the stuff that's on TV now, no, I don't. I don't even bother with that.
It's a different animal, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's absolutely different. What do you think about Hulk Hogan's little people?
I'm glad you brought that up.
I wonder how many episodes of that they made, because I don't think they're going to have to worry about making any.
You know what? Now, what? I know little people need a job too, but for him... Yeah. To be associated with something that cheesy and sleazy, I'm sorry. I mean, that he's done shot himself in the foot, in my opinion. I mean, my God, I'm embarrassed for people to say, have you seen? I said, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I've just seen the commercials, and I won't even watch the commercial again. I mean, it's he acts like it's, like, I mean, I can't even describe it. Why'd you bring that up? What did you
play? I saw the commercial, and then it come on. I forget what night it come on, but I watched a couple minutes of it, and I thought, Jesus Christ, you know, this is amazing, you know. I can't believe that somebody even come together and paid him to do that.
I can't believe somebody that made the money he made in this business would do something like that.
Yeah.
But he has no respect for what we did. I mean, so it fits the bill. And I saw Poor Flair work the other night. Somebody called me and said it was on. I watched him work with Sting. I'm sorry. He's going to stay way too long.
Isn't that sad about him? You know, I mean, you probably heard all this stuff.
It's pathetic.
You know, Rick always treated me real nice, and you know, we got along good, you know. For him to get in that kind of predicament and everything else.
Well, it's sad.
Yes, it is. Very sad.
Absolutely. Well, listen, guys, I'm going to run, and Charlie, I'll see you next weekend.
Yes, sir, I'm going to be there.
Good deal.
I've already got my reservations made.
What's that?
I've already
got my reservations made. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Mike.
I was just saying we appreciate you calling in and joining us. You got anything you would like to plug while you're on the air with us? Any new projects going on?
Well, the Stan Hansen book, a lot of talk about that. It's really good. If you want to learn something about Japanese pro wrestling, that's the book to get, because he really...
What I've heard.
Yeah. You get a good education on pro wrestling in Japan. So, but anyway, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for letting me on. I had a good time. Thank you for answering my questions, Charlie. I really enjoyed this.
All right. You're welcome, Scott. It was great to talk to you.
You too, and we'll talk to you soon. See you all, guys. Bye, Bobby. Bye, Jerry.
See you, Scott.
Bye, Scott.
Bye-bye.
Charlie, were you here when Hogan came through here as Sterling Golden?
No, I wasn't. No, I sure wasn't.
He lasted 2 weeks, and Ole fired him.
Did he really?
I was standing there. He told him. He said, "We've tried everything we know to do with you, and we can't do nothing with you." And he was awful. Oh, it was awful.
He still is.
Oh, I know. It never got any better. I mean, it just, you know, the thing is, you know, you were talking about, you know, the money he made. Yeah, you know, I think we all would agree. If we had to do it over again, we'd probably be a little more conservative with our money. But this guy made all this money. Now, he, you know, we've seen the lavish lifestyle. We've heard about the divorce. We've heard about all this. You know, I'm sure he has nothing. Charlie mentioned Ric Flair. There was an expose online here a couple of weeks ago, an article that ran in a paper that told all the legal details that Flair's involved in. He's got no choice but to keep working. He don't know nothing else, and he'll never get out from under.
No.
And they said that match you said you watched, I read today that he ruptured the bursa sac in his elbow. So he's got to have surgery and going to be out for a while.
Well, he looked like he was absolutely physically and mentally gone.
I'm sure he is.
You know, him and I were the same age. He's 62, too, you know.
Jeez.
Who he looks like to me is, if you guys remember Fred Blassie in the early 70s before he quit actually wrestling in the ring, that's who he looks like physically to me.
Yeah.
And he looks just like Fred Blassie.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I've got to run myself. I hate to run.
All right. I was going to wrap it up.
Charlie, I enjoyed this, brother. I really do, and I appreciate the kind words that you said about me and my brother. I really appreciate it.
You know, Jerry, it was great talking to you. I know it's been years and years, you know. You know, maybe I'll get to catch up with you someplace.
I hope so. I always have spoken high of you, and I mean every word of it.
Well, you know, I appreciate it. Make sure you tell your brother I said hello, you know.
I promise I will, Charlie.
I appreciate it, Jerry.
Okay, good night, guys.
Good night, Jerry. Right.
Good night.
I guess Jerry's pager went off. Somebody's walking a dog on Tybee Island.
Yep, he's on.
He's gone to make a citizen's arrest.
Is he?
Oh, man. Well, Charlie, I certainly appreciate you joining us. This has been a thrill, and Jerry was not exaggerating when he said your name
comes up all the time with on our show. We did a show that one of the first shows that we did when I started hosting the show back last year was I wanted to talk about guys who worked and had long careers and worked in all kind of places, but just was not seen by a whole lot of people or recognized as far as that. And the first two names I thought of, yours was number one, and Bill Howard was number two.
Bill Howard, he's a great guy.
That was the first two I thought of. Followed closely by Tony Russo, if you remember him. He was another one that worked all over the place and was a fantastic worker and just never got the recognition that he should have.
Yeah, I remember Tony. You know, it was a pleasure. I'm glad you let me on your show, and you know, it was an honor. It was great to talk to you guys. You know, it's brought up a lot of old memories and a lot of good times, except for spilling coffee on Bobby. He got it all over the seat of my Trans Am.
Oh.
I felt so sorry for him.
Oh well, we survived it.
Yeah, I guess so.
We survived it.
We appreciate you joining us. We'll have to do this again. Maybe get Mickey on with us too, and you guys can tell us a little bit more about the early days in Detroit and Lions Gym and everything.
Okay, that sounds fantastic. All right. All right. Thanks a lot, guys. You guys have a good evening.
Thanks, Charlie. Good night.
Bobby, we'll get together next week and we'll do this again. I'm not sure. I don't have anything lined up yet, but I'm sure we'll come up with something.
All righty. I'm assuming you're in New Orleans.
I'm in Slidell.
Slidell. Close enough.
Close enough.
Only 2 inches on the map to New Orleans. So.
And I'm with Ron West, so you know I'm having fun.
I'm sure you are.
All right, we'll talk to you guys next week.
All righty, thanks, Mike. Good night.
Take care. Bye-bye.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, the latest news on pro wrestling and MMA, and more. GWH thanks you for your support.